ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
A lot of people have been throwing the B word around lately.
The entire AI industry is a bubble primed to burst.
In July 2025, tech companies' share of the S&P 500 reached its highest level since the dot-com bubble 25 years ago, and that really didn't go very well.
The NASDAQ index falling more than 200 points.
So what happened last time, and what can it tell us about what's going on with AI today? I'm Matt Bevan, and on my show, if you're listening, we give you the backstories behind the big stories.
The stuff that'll probably surprise you about life on an Australian Antarctic base.
I feel like I'd be almost comfortable in a t-shirt right now, which is very surprising.
There's a lot of hard-working Tasmanians out there.
My boss is the boss of Tasmania.
Tasmanians want us to get on with the job.
North, south, east, west, I don't care where you live in the state.
We mainly grow tomatoes, cucumbers, heaps of lettuce, mint, kale, bok choy, bak choy, basil, sage, heap of herbs for the chefs in the kitchen.
Fish and chip Friday, so we'll have some gummy shark that'll be battered and we'll have some chips because you can't have fish and chips without chips, obviously.
There's a gym in the red shed. Yeah, we've got a ski loop too, so if people wanted to go for a ski or a bike ride.
Having the facilities like a sauna, now a sauna religiously here, and it's so nice and it's beautiful to do, and you want to get one, you get back now, so...
Hello and welcome to Tassiecast. I'm Airlie Ward, coming to you from Nipaluna, Hobart. Ever fancied working in Antarctica? Maybe you'd love nothing more than to escape the family at Christmas. Australia's bases have all the creature comforts, well, sort of, but don't be fooled. Communal living in one of the harshest places on Earth isn't for the faint-hearted. Literally, you can't go there if you've got a dicky ticker. This week, we're pulling the curtain back on life on an Antarctic station. It's mostly about the science, right? Australia's Antarctic program includes vital climate research, studying ice sheets and bergs and how they influence global sea levels, investigates the unique species that call the frozen south home, among them whales, penguins, seals and krill. It's also of vital strategic importance for Australia. We lay claim to more than 40% of the continent and the Antarctic Treaty System, ensuring it's a continent of science and peace. At the same time, providing a handy boost to Tasmania's economy as the gateway south. But to make all that tick, there's a veritable army of people needed. So what's life like on an Australian Antarctic base, and what does it take to become an expeditioner? The ABC's Antarctic reporter, Jarno Gibson, has just returned from a trip to Casey Station, where he spent almost 2 weeks gathering stories that you'll see and hear in the coming weeks. Jarno, hello.
Hello, Ellie.
Jarno, how would you describe Casey Station?
Well, in terms of its location, Casey Station is about 3,500 kilometres southwest of Hobart. It's the largest of Australia's three permanent stations in Antarctica. And when you arrive, it looks a little bit like a Lego village. So it has these large block-like buildings that are set on a rocky peninsula that's covered in snow and ice. So there's, for example, the Red Shed, which houses all the accommodation and the communal areas like the kitchen and the dining facilities. There's the Green Shed, which has all the supplies that they need over an entire year. It's a little bit like a tiny Australian settlement that's been plonked in a very unfamiliar frozen landscape, and it has a bunch of different characteristics. It has kind of the workforce that you might see on a remote mining camp, although of course mining is not allowed in Antarctica. It has the pace of a logistics hub. There are scientific facilities there. The setting and some of the recreational activities also reminded me of a ski lodge. So it's a very unique place.
How did you get there?
We were provided with support by the Australian Antarctic Program to travel down there. So the program charters a passenger jet over summer, and it has about 20 flights that take cargo and expeditioners down to Antarctica. It's a 4.5 hour flight from Hobart down to a place called Wilkins Aerodrome. And you actually land on an ice runway. So it's built on top of a glacier, and the glacier actually shifts about 12 meters a year. And when we touched down, I was expecting a hard landing, but it was actually one of the softest, smoothest landings I've ever had. And then the door opens, you step outside. It was a beautiful day when we were there. It was there was no wind. It was blue skies. It was very glary. It was about minus 7 degrees, but just days earlier, there'd been blizzard-like conditions, and the wind chill factor meant it was about minus 35 degrees. Once you touch down, you then have to get on a bus to travel to Casey Station, and you travel along essentially just a snow track. There's nothing to see as far as the eye can see. It takes about 3 hours to travel the 70 kilometres to Casey Station, and along the way, there's only really one spot to stop, and that is when you cross the Antarctic Circle. There's a little sign marking that point, so everyone hops out of the bus and gets a selfie to capture the moment.
You had to change, did you? I mean, did you just kind of like, what did you wear?
Good question. So before you travel down to Antarctica, you're kitted out with survival gear, and so while you're actually on the flight, just before you begin your descent, there's an announcement and you have to change into your survival gear. So that is three layers that include your thermals, your fleeces, and then on top of that, you put a very high quality shell to protect you from the wind.
Now, you're one lucky journo, Jarno. Not a lot of people get to experience what you did. How does the Antarctic Division recruit its expeditioners?
There are three permanent stations on the continent. There's a fourth one in the sub-Antarctic in the Southern Ocean at Macquarie Island. And so they need about 400 expeditioners to operate those stations both over summer and then throughout the winter. And so they're looking for a range of roles, all sorts of different types of tradies, from carpenters, plumbers, electricians, station leaders, Bureau of Meteorology staff, chefs, doctors, you name it. There's actually about 6,000 people who apply. So they have to really bring that down and choose the best of the best.
And not a straightforward interview, I'm guessing, either, Jarno.
No, there's a bunch of hurdles you have to get through before you get approval. So one of those is a very thorough medical. That examination takes about 3 hours. We were only there for 10 days. We had to go through this process. They check your heart, your fitness level, your hearing. You have to undergo a chest x-ray. What they're trying to ensure is that they're not going to need to medically evacuate you once you're down there, because that is logistically very challenging. It costs a lot of money, and certainly over winter, sometimes it's impossible. You also have to undergo a thorough psychological assessment. We were there for less than 2 weeks, so we didn't have to do that. But anyone who's there for longer does have to go through that process, because it is a very challenging environment. You're in a small community, you're living and working together, and at certain points of the year, there's no way to get back home. And some people are spending up to a year down there. But for us, we had to do about 10 hours of online training, and that covered things such as the environmental protocols down in Antarctica and also raising awareness about some of the risk factors, including the cold weather.
So when you got there, was there an additional kind of an induction?
So all of the expeditioners who arrive and are spending a fair bit of time down there have to undergo survival training. That's a day and night long process where they learn the basics, such as using a radio, using a compass for navigation, but also learning how to rescue people if they, for example, fall through the sea ice. And you also have to spend a night outdoors where you have to build a little shelter made of ice to protect yourself from the wind. And then you have to get into a little bivy bag and sleep in a sleeping bag, essentially under the stars. The other thing that they do during the training is they outline the toilet protocols. Obviously, they're trying to protect the environment, and so there's a leave no trace policy. And that means you have to carry a pee bottle and a poo bag, and it can be a little bit awkward, to say the least. And of course, there are no trees, nowhere you can go and hide behind.
Another unusual one, medics going south have to have their appendix removed first. Is that right?
That is right. So you can imagine, given that there's only one doctor over winter, if the doctor gets sick, there's going to be no one else that's able to actually perform the operation required to remove an appendix. Back in the 1960s, there were was actually a case where a Russian doctor on a Russian station did get appendicitis, and they were forced to remove their own appendix using a local anaesthetic and the help of a couple of other expeditioners down there who held a mirror and handed the doctor the equipment to remove the appendix. But certainly to avoid that situation, the requirement is that any doctors who are wintering in Antarctica as part of the Australian Antarctic Program, they have to voluntarily get their appendix removed before travelling south.
Oh, I'm wriggling in my chair on that one, Jarno. And if you have a toothache, there are some unusual dental helpers, I understand.
Yeah, so there are no dentists, so you have to rely on the doctor. And the doctor has done essentially a speed course in dentistry. They also, if needed, can get the assistance of some of the expeditioners. So it might be the carpenter or the chef who act as kind of like a pseudo or lay surgical assistants. So the advice is, before travelling south, go and see your dentist, get all the work you need to get done before you head down there.
Now, Jarno, ensuring life in close confines in a pretty hostile environment would be absolutely crucial, because there have been some pretty alarming reports in previous years, the past 5 years, in fact, about cultural issues at Australian Antarctic stations, including sexual harassment, bullying and more.
Certainly the Australian Antarctic Division over the past few years has been trying to put in place a bunch of measures to create safe and inclusive workplaces. While we were down there for those 10 days, we didn't see any of the issues that did emerge in those reports over the past few years. In fact, what we saw was actually very encouraging. There was a very good work ethic. There was a lot of communication. We saw teamwork. People were supporting each other. There was a sense of camaraderie. And I did speak to the station leader about these issues. So her name is Justine Thompson. She's a veteran police officer from New South Wales. She said that prior to heading down there, the whole team who are spending winter spends a few months in Hobart, going through training, socialising together, and they also come up with their own set of values. Here's a little of what she had to say.
Because things can be quite niggly and small in the first instance, and people might think it's a bit of a joke, but then as time goes by, it escalates. So dealing with things really early. So I've been upfront about that if something does happen. And then we fall back onto our values about being a part of a team and being respectful. And part of that is having conversations yourself if you're not comfortable with things, but then letting go, moving on, and not holding a grudge. That's really important as well. We are all human. We all make mistakes. We will have ups and downs. Like, that's just a part of being not only a human, but living in a small community.
So, Jarno, how many on the base this summer?
Well, we were down there during the peak season, so there was more than 120 people on station. Almost every bed was full. Over winter, that scales back to just about 30, 34 people were there over the past winter. In terms of the gender breakdown, the majority of people are men, but that largely reflects some of the trades people that are down there. While people are down there, particularly during those cold winter months, there's not a heap to do off station, but on station there are a whole bunch of recreational facilities and activities. So there's a library, there's a cinema, gyms, there's even a sauna and a spa. There's also a bar at Casey Station, but there is an alcohol limit, which is 10 standard drinks per week. And all of the alcohol is actually locked in a facility that's referred to as Fort Knox. And that's essentially to make sure that even though people are allowed to have a social drink, the station leaders certainly don't want anything getting out of hand.
Now, what was the food like? I reckon there was no spam in sight.
The food was fantastic. Thankfully, no spam. And also, thankfully, no penguin on the menu, which was something that back in the day during the expeditions at the time of Douglas Mawson, they would have been eating. My highlight was barramundi curry and also baked cheesecake for dessert. I spoke to one of the summer chefs. Her name is Brooke Hartney. She's a cook from Darwin. She described herself as Brooke the cook.
We are the best people on station as far as everyone is concerned. And you never upset the chef.
Any special meals that you're hoping to prepare over the coming weeks and months while you're here for summer?
Perfecting my bread. And I've had the privilege of working with some chefs here that have some amazing experience with bread, and they've shared their recipes with me. I hope I come out of out here being the bread queen.
The station also grows a lot of its own food, I understand, Jano.
Well, there is a hydroponics facility. From the outside, it's sub-zero temperatures. You open the door and you go inside. It's about 24 degrees and it has this beautiful garden-like smell. And I think people do retreat there because it is such a nice place to go inside. It's full of greenery. And so they're growing things like tomatoes, cucumbers, lettuce, all sorts of herbs. And over the year, they were able to produce 120 kilos of fresh produce.
Jano, what was it like for those travelling back to Australia on the flight with you? I mean, they'd spent a year there.
There were a lot of mixed emotions on that flight. A lot of them had been down there for the entire winter. They'd bonded. They'd become best friends. They described each other as almost like family. But while you're in Antarctica, it's a very different experience. It's white. There are no trees, as I said earlier. So when we came down to land, I noticed one of the expeditioners was looking out the window as we came into Hobart, and they just uttered the word trees because they hadn't seen trees for a year. And then when we landed and arrived, there was a little briefing and everyone was reminded to, if they're in a shop and they're getting something from Woolies, for example, they need to pay for it because down in Antarctica, everything is provided and you forget that you have to pull out your wallet. And then a few days after we got back to Hobart, I bumped into a few of the expeditioners. They had a bit of a dazed look about them. They were still recalibrating into the busy city life. And one of them said to me, they were still having to remember to look both ways before they cross the road. So it is a real readjustment.
A bit like sort of sailors getting their land legs back. Now, Jano, did you need a passport?
You do actually need a passport, but it's not for the reason you might think. You don't need one to go to Antarctica. You need one to leave Australia. So we went through customs. Then you fly down to Antarctica. There's no one there checking your passport because there is no one country that owns Antarctica. When you come back to Australia, again, you need your passport to return.
What about those staying on station? What's Christmas going to look like for them?
While we were there, they were getting the Christmas decorations up, and certainly there'll be a special meal put on for everyone. And one of the good things these days, compared to the old days where you virtually had very limited communication capacity, nowadays there is satellite technology, there is Starlink internet. Not only can you watch the latest Netflix series at Christmas time, people will still be able to make video calls to their family.
Did you do that while you were there?
I actually did. I stepped outside the red shed and called up my family back home and was able to show them what little bit of what it looked like at Casey Station.
Just finally, Jano, what surprised you the most?
There are a couple of things. The first was actually how warm it felt. But there was one day when it was actually above zero. It was 1 degree and you could actually see some of the long-term winter expeditioners. They were walking around in shorts and thongs and some of them were sunbaking with their shirts off.
You'd need sunscreen, wouldn't you? Because the sun would be incredibly intense and bouncing off that white snow.
Absolutely. You want as much sunblock as you can put on. And the other thing that I did not anticipate there would be a spa that you could go to and sit in and look out over this incredible vista of Antarctica.
Did you have a dip?
No time to have a dip. I was busy working on all those stories that hopefully will be rolling out in the next few weeks.
Thanks, Jano. Are you keen to go back?
It was such a privilege. We were the first media team to go down as part of the Australian Antarctic program in about 4 years. And I think anyone given the opportunity to go and experience Antarctica would put their hands up for it.
Thank you. And thanks to you for joining us this year. This is our final episode for 2025 before we take a summer break. But we will drop a few surprises in your podcast feed between now and February so you don't get too Tassiecast hungry. For now, cheers.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.